Information Management and Technology will come to order, and we're going to have a public hearing on House Bill 2179. And we'll open the hearing on House Bill 2179 at this time. Here we are on 2179. And Mark Long.
And Patrick Allen is with us.
From Patrick Allen, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Allen. I manage the Office of Regulatory Streamlining in the Department of Consumer and Business Services. This bill is one of the 36 or 37 regulatory streamlining bills before the legislature this session. This bill has a somewhat misleading relating clause. What this bill really deals with is the ability of the Building Codes Division in DCBS to deal with emerging building technologies and building materials. We have been working with staff of various committees to actually suggest that you consider having this bill referred to the Business Committee, which deals in the main with those kinds of issues. We've had a conversation with Chair Brown of that committee, who's amenable to that, and would like to suggest that as your action when you take action on this bill. Mark Long from Building Codes is here with me. If you do want to discuss the substance of the bill, our recommendation would be to move it on to the Business Committee.
Are there any questions for Patrick? I believe what we're doing is a work session.
A public hearing,
pardon me. And take that very action. So we'll schedule a public work session for...
You're going to schedule a work
session? A hearing.
So we're going to do this right this time. We're going to schedule a work session for next Tuesday.
We're on the same page. We're going to schedule a work session for next Tuesday, and we will take that action. I've had opportunity to visit with Patrick, and you have a big enough job streamlining government. We'll help you with this one.
I'm not sure. It looked like Representative Witt might have had a...
Do you have a question, Representative Witt?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, can you give me some examples of what we're talking about here? It kind of seems a little amorphous to me at this point.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Witt, for the record, Mark Long, I'm the Administrator of State Building Codes. And to let you know what we're trying to deal with, just give you some quick background. One of my biggest concerns as a regulator is that the speed of regulations and our ability to deal with things that we don't understand that are new sometimes isn't as timely as it should be. And so I've had a little bit of experience over the last couple of years with items of new technology, whether it be microprocessing equipment, things to deal with wind power, solar power, other types of new and emerging technologies where equipment comes in, and frankly the current building code has no standards, doesn't, that we adopt here in Oregon, doesn't recognize the equipment. There's question of whether or not it's allowed, and if it's allowed, how you regulate it. And this would allow an expedited process faster than the typical 6 months to, the last piece of product we worked on was several years to get through the regulatory process to recognize high technology equipment. This would allow us to the speed in which to look at this equipment, base our decisions on national standards, go through a rulemaking process, which can be as early as 45 days to 60 days, and approve this technology, and basically let people know that Oregon has the ability to move quickly on new and innovative types of construction. That's really what I'm trying to accomplish.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Crum.
Thank you. Mark, you mentioned a piece of equipment or some kind of technology. Can you give me an example of, and this is where I thought Representative Witt was going, actually. I mean, like, it's okay to name names.
Sure.
Like an example of a piece of equipment that you needed to regulate, that its use of, that had to wait for legislative authority to occur.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, the best example, and it's one of our more recent ones, is in the high technology sector, dealing with companies such, whether it be Intel or other manufacturers, they typically, when you're talking about silicone wafer machines, and it gets, you know, they can come in and talk a little more articulate than I can, but these pieces of equipment are millions of dollars. They're built overseas. They do a particular, they have a particular function within a manufacturing setting, and it is a very controlled and closed type of environment. That equipment comes in, and our current standards before last session when we got a bill basically said to treat that piece of equipment the same as a toaster that's available to a citizen on the shelf, you know, UL listing, other kinds of things. And we literally had situations where inspectors and folks on my behalf were out looking at these pieces of equipment, didn't understand how they worked, and said, well, you have a blue wire here, and we think that it should be a green wire because that's the way the toaster standards are. And we were changing wires in millions of dollars a piece of equipment and then creating a huge production problem across the board for these kinds of manufacturers. And we thought, you know, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And there were national and international standards to regulate this equipment and engineering standards that our codes just didn't recognize. And so, again, not to be too redundant, in fact, you may remember, I think I was in front of your committee earlier, and someone talked to me about building codes being a pocket watch agency regulating pocket watches.
Yeah.
If you remember that.
Yes.
And we're not building pocket watches anymore. Well, my codes are built for pocket watches, and my biggest fear as we work on making industrial land available and we work on rapid building codes approval, that we don't have a way to recognize emerging technology, whatever that is, and it's typically solar, high technology, wind, what's the latest, some of the hydrogen fuel, and those kinds of things, where people come in and there are international standards and we're unable in a timely way to deal with that. The current process is anywhere from 6 months to several years to get them through the regulatory barriers. And I think that doesn't land Oregon open for business and doesn't put us in a very competitive light for other states and, frankly, international markets where they're a little bit more nimble than we are currently right now. So that's what this is about. Hopefully I answered your question.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair?
Yes, follow-up.
Or maybe more of a clarification. I want to go back to the Intel example for just a second.
Sure.
Why would we regulate that in the first place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, that is an excellent question. And so what this bill is, it's really proactive, preventative, looking ahead, saying, okay, we know on past experience these things come up and it's about to, so we're going to have a mechanism to deal with it. Why would we regulate it? Because our codes either suggested that we regulated it or we weren't sure that we regulated it. So, unfortunately, in my business, some folks take the precautionary approach that if we're not sure, let's go ahead and regulate it and let's go in there and inspect it and let's see what we can do. And then once you open up that lid, start looking in there, that creates a significant problem, not only for the manufacturer but for the regulators, because you're looking at things that we don't understand. So today, thanks in part last session, House Bill 2717, we don't regulate that piece of equipment in Oregon. But that was the result of a 3 to 4 year process, and I'm not sure in today's economic situation and where we want to have Oregon, that's what we want to offer businesses that come here. It'll take you 4 or 5 years to figure out whether we should or shouldn't regulate something in a manufacturing setting.
Follow up?
Yes, Representative Crummell.
Thank you. So, Mark, are you suggesting then that it's either the statute or it's the rule, one of the two, Oregon Administrative Rule or Oregon Revised Statutes, that sort of requires us to probably regulate things that we have no business regulating and also take away the inability of the inspector to use common sense? So, for example, the blue wire versus a green wire sort of an argument. who gives a rip what color the wire is if it's a function of the wire is to connect one hot thing to another hot thing or to ground one hot thing to the ground? Who cares what color the wire is? I recognize that there are some standards within the electrical world. I'm not an electrician. Don't pretend to be. Don't ever want to be. But I do understand that there's, you know, like a red wire usually means it's hot, and a black wire or something usually means there's a ground and, you know, stuff like that. But other than that, why would we care? My real question is, the statutes or the administrative rule, one or the other, mm-hmm. and I'll let you tell me which one, or both. That prevents the inspectors from using some common sense, and also if they're sitting there looking at an electrical schematic drawing that shows, you know, the green wire is doing what maybe the blue wire is supposed to do, but...
Mr. Chair, Representative Krummel, you know, it's fairly common in our world. The statutes and the rules are set up based on a particular set of circumstances at a particular time, okay? And most of the things that I oversee are fairly old. So, you know, how you go about regulating products and businesses, even on a broader basis, from 10 years ago to 20 years ago to today, it is changing a lot faster than regulations able to keep up with. So it's a statutory, and then it gets into a real problem, and that is the biggest challenge that I see for my job. Well, one of the many challenges that I have is to make sure that our rules and regulations are keeping up with the speed of innovation and technology, and this is my best effort at making sure that we're proactive and able to address the things that come at us that I don't know exactly what's going to come at me next week. Okay? You know, I go to meetings and we hear about things, and then, again, to be quite candid, I worry that we are going to, as a state of Oregon, hopefully attract innovation here, whether it's in the biotechnology, nanotechnology, other things you hear about, and then all of a sudden there's going to be some clunky piece of regulation that was based on the way the world was 20 years ago, and it's going to put us into this green wire, blue wire business that isn't even relative to today's world. And so that's why I'm here, and that's why we have the bill. So hopefully I addressed your question.
One more question, Mr. Chair?
Certainly, Representative Krummel.
Thank you. Mark, will this become part of your performance measures that we'll be looking at as we when we go through the performance measures and ways and means process to, you know, that you've had the, you know, ability to have this flexibility and how it's streamlined your agency and the ability of your inspectors to...
And, you know, we're just kind of, Mr. Chair, Representative Krummel, we've just been through Ways and Means, the first phase, last week, and specifically on performance measures, the answer would be no. Overall, obviously, the things that we're doing as a state, as an agency, and as a division on regulatory streamline is a part of our Ways and Means discussion, and then the anticipated results and the things that I intend to accomplish over the next 2 years, regulatory streamline and looking at these issues is one of them, but a specific performance measure. Can you think
of
one?
Well, yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Krummel, I think, as Mark says, we've just gone through, finished our first phase of Ways and Means on that point, and neither of us would be in a position to agree today to adding a performance measure. The bigger issue, I think, would be given that this is a new attempt to try to deal with an emerging issue, my suggestion would be that it would make more sense for us to have a couple of years under our belts dealing with that issue before we even first try to do performance measurement, because we'd have no frame of reference to sit here and try to create a measure for that kind of activity today, where we could down the road.
Now, on just a corollary, not to go too far, Mr. Chair, Representative Krummel, we do have a performance measure on our alternative and flexible permit approaches that we're working with local government, and we are measuring the results of that. So this is about, you know, what you regulate and how you regulate, and then there's the delivery, which is through permitting, and we have a thing called a minor label program, which are permits that are available anywhere in the state, very rapid. You can buy them in bulk. They're for small things, such as water heaters and whatnot. But we are tracking that, because that's another piece of my overall goal of making Oregon as flexible, providing solutions and options, and frankly, as nimble as possible to deal with the regulatory structure that we have and with construction in general.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. I just kind of had to throw the thing in there about the performance measures. And actually, I didn't know if this was something that had maybe been proposed as an additional performance measure for the agency. But I do think that Oregon does tend to overregulate. So I appreciate the fact that they've brought this bill forward to try to see if we can get away from some of that and to give their folks the flexibility that they need to be able to actually do the job in the field instead of having to go back to some damn rule book that is so archaic that it doesn't meet their needs. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Carmelo. Are there any other questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay. Is there any other testimony on House Bill 2179? If not, the hearing on House Bill 2179 is closed. We will now open the hearing on House Bill 2302.
Man, you know how to clear a room out, don't you? Close the public hearing and the place clears out.
Jim, that's you that's going to give us testimony?
Did you open the...
On 2302? I believe I did.
Okay.
Yeah. And for the record...
For the record, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jim Craven, representing the Oregon Council of the American Electronics Association. AEA is a national trade association that represents the high-tech industry in both the electronic equipment, software, medical technology, internet-related sector. We're here today to talk about spyware, which, having visited with members of the committee, is something that many of you have on your mind, and this bill, House Bill 2302, as I understand, was introduced by, I think, the Interim House Judiciary, the Interim Joint Judiciary Committee. I'm not aware that it has a individual legislative champion at this point. And the chair asked me to come in and talk more broadly about the issue of spyware than about the nuts and bolts of this bill itself. So I'm going to attempt to do that. Spyware is one of the many contemporary threats to the Internet. And in addition to spyware, you've heard about spam, unsolicited email. You've heard about viruses. The newest threat is something called phishing with a PH. These are these emails that say, your account at eBay is going to be closed unless you click here and give us all your personal financial information so we can go steal your bank account. That's phishing. There's also worms and all kinds of phrases out there. Spywares, I would say, in addition to the phishing issue, probably the hot issue right now in terms of internet threats around the country, and there have been at least 10 bills in state legislatures dealing with the issue, and it's also before the U.S. Congress. Talk just briefly about what spyware is. It generally describes software programs that install covertly on your computer. So this isn't something that you consent to necessarily. It sort of installs without your informed consent. They often start up automatically when you run your computer and take over part of its functionality, oftentimes something to do with your internet connection, can significantly erode your computer performance. And finally, usually aid in some kind of gathering of information about your internet surfing to do something fairly innocuous like serve you advertisements, to do something very malicious like track your keystrokes and attempt to capture social security numbers, personal financial information. Lots of different what we call devious behavior that results from spyware. Those annoying pop-up ads that you see when you're trying to surf the internet and stuff keeps jumping up on your screen and trying to offer you all kinds of stuff. You've got what we call configuration hijacking. It can reset your homepage. It can switch your search engine. Again, lots of that kind of behavior. Something called cycle stealing, which attempts to go use your computer to do something else. Sometimes as bad as serving up pornography, sometimes doing what they call denial of service attacks, where they get computers all over the country to go attack one company's website all at once, thus crashing somebody's corporate website. And to deliberate damage to your computer, deleting data, changing your security settings, stuff like that. So it's a real wide range of, you know, annoying pop-up ads to quite malicious behavior. Where does it come from? Part of the problem with spyware is not having a certain source to be able to say, well, here's the source, so I'll just turn it off. Sometimes spyware is embedded in pop-up ads that you see when you're surfing the internet. Oftentimes downloading, as I said, quote-unquote free programs. Sometimes free programs come with a cost. There's an embedded spyware program inside a free cell phone ringer or some downloaded music. Downloading images and files from the internet can have embedded software code in them that can run as spyware. And even down to programs that say, click here to kill spyware on your computer, can be themselves spyware programs. How do you know you have it? And I know some of you have run into this personally. You go to, you know, all of you have a home page for your internet. You know, maybe it's MSN, maybe it's the legislative website, whatever. You turn on your computer one day and there's a home page that you didn't expect. Good idea that that's the result of spyware. Your computer is really measurably slower, particularly when you're online. It seems to be dragging, even though you've got that Comcast or DSL connection. Getting lots of pop-up ads is another, you know, surefire indication that something's infected you. Again, slow erratic behavior, or even down to computer lockups and frequent crashes, can all be the result of something that has infected your computer. As I noticed that it's, you know, it's difficult to determine the source because there's multiple sources, and but to also point out that not all computer problems are the result of spyware. There are other things going on with your computer and on the internet that just because your computer is slow doesn't necessarily mean, you know, it's the result of spyware. There can be other functional problems. On page three, I just have a few screenshots, a couple screenshots. This first one, oftentimes, I didn't put this in color, I apologize, is oftentimes a blue screen because I've seen it. This one, that it's a pop-up ad and it says, your computer may be infected with spyware. Click here to find out what's going on. This is oftentimes an actual spyware installer itself, which is, you know, it's terrible to think that stuff appears on your computer and says, you're infected with spyware, click here to get rid of it, and what you're actually doing is putting spyware on your computer. The one underneath I've also seen. Oftentimes, these are just simply one big picture image. No matter where you click on there, sometimes if you click the little Xbox on the upper right-hand corner, you can close it safely. Sometimes these are essentially one big image, and clicking on yes or clicking on no is just clicking on yes. You know, you see that cancel button. That doesn't cancel it. That installs the program. So they are, you know, malicious, tricky kinds of stuff that's, I think, on the rise. On the final page, sort of the discussion of, you know, realizing that this is a problem and it's not something that obviously my members support. In fact, I've got a lot of members who are building software and technology to try to combat the problem. It's sort of suggestions about what's the best way to deal with this problem, realizing that it is a problem. Number one, you know, surf safely and visited trusted websites. And I did indicate there that this is easier said than done if you have teenagers in your house. You know, the kids today, they want to download the free cell phone ringers, and they want to download music, and they want to download pictures, and they want to download cartoons, and they'll click pretty much on anything. You know, I have two college-age kids, and really since they have left the house, my computer problems have diminished, quite frankly, because I'm trying to keep my home computer as absolute pristine as possible. And even if that's your goal and you sort of know what you're doing, it can be difficult to try to lock out all bad things that can happen. avoid downloading quote-unquote free programs from sites that you're not really sure where you are, because sometimes they come with a cost. Adjusting the security controls on your browser to, you know, medium or high so that you're less likely to have programs that can activate on your computer without at least your computer telling you something's going on that you might think twice about. Patching your computer software with the latest software updates. There's new threats every day, and the makers, either whether it's Norton or Microsoft, I mean, people are trying every day to stay ahead of this stuff and releasing, you know, once they find an attack, they try to release an update or a so-called patch. Trying to keep up with that on your own computer is a really good strategy. And then there's a number of programs. There's antivirus programs, such as made by Symantec. I think that is sitting on all your desktops in your offices here in the building, sort of guarding you 24/7, looking for random attacks. You can put a firewall on your computer that can both stop stuff coming in, and if something comes in, stop it from going back out. Some of these programs come onto your computer and then use your computer as a host to go do other things, send spam to people, send pornography and such. So, you know, a firewall that both works on incoming and outgoing transmissions is a very good thing to do. There's a number of quite well-regarded programs that are free downloads. Two that I use probably twice a week, Spybot Search and Destroy and Adaware. Both of these, the basic programs are free on the Internet, and they're quite well regarded. And then there are for purchase programs such as the Symantec or the Norton Internet Security Suite that has both antivirus, anti-spam, anti-spyware functionality. Microsoft itself is coming out with an anti-spyware program that's currently available for free download from the Microsoft site. So we really think basically that consumer education and installation of technology tools is probably the best, holds out the best promise for combating this problem. We really don't think that passing bills in individual states holds out much hope for your constituents that we will get rid of this scourge by passing a bill and creating yet another unfair trade practice in our statutes. Utah, about a year ago, passed a bill, the first in the country. It had to do a lot with pop-up ads and such, and it's already been enjoined by a federal district judge. It's been put on hold for constitutional and interstate commerce issues. That Utah bill is really the model for what got drafted as 2302, so I wouldn't advise that 2302 is your best model, since it's already, and it's a different district, obviously, but it's already been tossed by one federal court judge. California did pass a bill last year that focuses more on malicious behavior rather than the technology itself, and we think that's probably better. But again, we're not sure that individual states doing this is going to stop the problem. Congress had a healthy debate last year. The House passed a bill 399-1. It didn't come up for Senate debate, but that debate has already once again started in U.S. Congress, and they may yet this year pass at least a model uniform federal bill that may have some value in getting after the problem. And we would agree that, and we're working with members of Congress on that uniform federal law, and hopefully something will emerge yet this year in the U.S. Congress. And finally, I want to close by reminding those of you, at least Representative Crummell, who were here last session, Representative Worth, you know, we spent about 6 months writing an anti-spam bill here in the Oregon legislature, and then only to see it preempted about 80 days later by the U.S. Congress, who overrode all the state bills and created a model federal law. Notwithstanding that, I'm not sure that everybody's spam has gone away just because the U.S. Congress said it was bad. I think spam is going away, but it's going away in terms of very strong blocking tools by your ISP and by products that you can install on your host computer to get rid of spam. We're having great luck at our national association with some new anti-spam software we've installed, and I think really that's what holds out the best promise is people, many of whom are my member companies, working with constituents, working with individuals to address this problem through technology and software fixes rather than passing a law and thinking that's going to solve it. So that's my pitch, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions, remembering that I'm a lobbyist and a English major and not a high-techy in real life.
Any questions for Mr. Craven? Yes, Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is probably going to be more of a statement than a question. First of all, Jim, I want to thank you for increasing my level of paranoia about 10 times. It is a very serious problem. You're absolutely right. But it just seems to me that, as you pointed out here, with, you know, federal legislation is probably the better route to go on something like this, so we've got uniformity across all states. It's quite a problem. I think what we need to do somehow is send a message to our congressional delegation that we want them to get on this thing and take care of this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, Senator Wyden loves this issue space. I know he's engaged in the debate. Like I say, it flew out of the House last year, and the Senate didn't defeat it. It just, you know, legislative timing, it didn't get addressed in the Senate. But I know Senator Wyden would probably appreciate that input. He was a key person on the spam bill, and likes to have these discussions about issues like this.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, thank you, Jim. And we'll hear from Jim Gardner. And Jim, for the record, if you'll identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jim Gardner, and I'm appearing today for Microsoft. Just to add to your paranoia, there was a study, and really to illustrate the magnitude of this problem, there was a study last fall conducted by America Online and the National Cybersecurity Alliance, which found that approximately 80% of all Internet users had some form of spyware or adware on their machines, and that the average computer contained 93 spyware or adware components. Perhaps most troubling, 89% of the respondents whose computers had tested positive were unaware that their computers contained any spyware. And over the last, as Jim mentioned, over the past year, we've seen a rise in a particularly disturbing form of spyware programs, so-called betrayware. And these applications claim to be anti-spyware detection or removal programs, but are in fact themselves spyware. And some analysts now estimate that there are more than 130 separate betrayware programs lurking somewhere in cyberspace. The explosion in the volume of spyware and the accompanying increase in the complexity with which these programs operate and the damage that they do has had an enormous impact on Microsoft. Many of our customers blame the problems caused by these programs on Microsoft software, believing that their systems are operating slowly, improperly, or not at all because of flaws in our products or other legitimate software. Spyware programs have increased our support costs, harmed Microsoft's reputation, and most importantly, thwarted the company's effort to optimize customers' computing experiences. Although spyware is becoming more pervasive and complex, the good news is that there also have been enormous strides over the past year in the fight against spyware, particularly with respect to the development of anti-spyware tools that empower users to protect themselves. As one example, this January 2005, Microsoft launched the beta version of what is called Windows Anti-Spyware. This is Microsoft's first dedicated anti-spyware tool based on technology developed by a company called Giant Software, which Microsoft acquired. The company developed and rapidly distributed this anti-spyware beta because customers have made it clear that this type of software, spyware, represents a major problem to them, and they wanted solutions as quickly as possible. That is now downloadable from the Microsoft website for free, the beta version of that is. And this, just a little brief tutorial about how that works. The program Windows Anti-Spyware works by scanning a customer's computer to locate spyware and other known deceptive software threats and then giving users the tools to easily and rapidly remove the programs, as well as to quickly restore damage done by the programs. Once the spyware has been removed, the Windows anti-spyware scan scheduler enables the scheduling of regular scans to help users maintain the clean condition of their computers. Windows anti-spyware can also be configured to block known spyware and other unwanted software from being installed on the computer in the first place. And to do this, the program relies on a kind of a grassroots worldwide group called the SpyNet community, which are essentially computer experts and a lot of volunteers. And this group plays a crucial role in determining which suspicious programs are classified as spyware. It's a voluntary network of users, SpyNet is, and it helps to uncover new threats quickly to ensure that all users are better protected and that any user could actually choose to join this group and report potential spyware to Microsoft. When new spyware programs are confirmed through SpyNet, their digital signatures are automatically downloaded by the Windows anti-software program and then help built into the protective software that's installed on the computer. So it's quite a technology challenge. It's an unceasing battle, a kind of a global software arms race. But there are a lot of resources are being devoted to it on the technology front to try to counter this very serious threat. I don't think I can probably answer any questions about this stuff because it's probably beyond me. But I'll try if anybody has one.
Do you have any questions?
I do.
Yes.
That just opens it up, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had, I guess, more of a just question. I had one computer crash this summer because of this. And then the thing I'm always concerned about is, you know, especially our legislative emails. I mean, I don't want to go through how many a day you get about have fun with your girlfriend and so, you know, so many different, and they, and a lot of times they'll just be going email and they'll pop it up. And I think, what could they do with this information, you know, when you involuntarily get sent this stuff and if there's spyware on your computer? So what has been done, I mean, from the information that's been collected through spyware?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, in terms of what can be done that's bad with it, you
right.
mean?
What could be done? I mean, literally, I can't even tell you how many emails a day we get that are, you know, just not something that I would go to, and they pop up, and I think, oh, great, now I just look like I'm, you know, visiting all these websites, and, you know, so and that's my paranoia, is what exactly have these just been nuisances in ruining your computers, and or has there actually been done something with the information potentially collected
yeah.
with your...
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, yeah, there is some of the software that Jim was describing, which essentially tracks keystrokes.
Mm-hmm.
If that's on there, and let's say you order something from Amazon,
mm-hmm.
it could track your credit card information.
Right.
So that's why it's important to really be vigilant about getting that stuff off.
Mr. Chair,
So
has there been any instances of that happening that you've been able to track to actually, you know, information collected through spyware?
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, yes, I think there have been instances where people have had identity theft, those kinds of problems develop as a result of spyware.
Mr. Chair, Representative Worth, there's a range of people out there, you know, trying to make a buck. And some of it is, you know, the pop-up ad stuff. Some of it's as annoying as a business model where you've got everyone, you know, for every click through on this ad, someone gets a couple pennies here. So you've got a lot of people throwing stuff around to actually make money just because someone clicks. They may never buy anything, but there's various business models of, and that's, I would say that's sort of annoying, but it's commercial activity. It's not meant to be nefarious or you know, crash your computer, steal your bank account or anything. And that's a large part of it. But what my folks at Symantec tell me is that, you know, two or three years ago, a lot of this stuff, the viruses and such, were
were often cases some kind of strange character down in his basement who wanted the notoriety of, you know, bringing down CNN's website or launching the love bug worm around the world. But I think what we're really seeing now is bad guys, organized crime in some cases, linking up with these people. And I think that's the more dire threat is, you know, the computer programmer nerds hooking up with some pretty bad actors who don't just want a notoriety, they want your money. And I think the phishing, you know, we only talked about that for a minute, and it is very much a related issue. I think just personally, I have four yesterday, three that said they were from eBay, one that said it was from my bank. Those are incredibly malicious because, you know, we've spent in our industry, and everybody's spent the last 10 years telling everybody, get online, you know, shop at Amazon, do your banking with Wells Fargo. And now now people are getting these very clever HTML emails that look like they got the eBay logo on them. They got real live links on them that link right to the real eBay site. And, you know, there's a problem with your account. I just got one this morning. You know, it's going to be shut down in 5 days. Click here, and a little form pops up. You look at the bottom. If you know what you're doing, that's not a secure socket connection. It's just a website asking you for your Social Security number, your mother's maiden name. The problem from the prosecutorial point of view is a lot of these things exist for 24 hours. You know, they get a host of email addresses, they throw the spam out, they hope for a few returns, they go try to do whatever they can to, you know, steal your bank account, and then they shut down and move on. And they're very, very difficult to locate, to find. A lot of them are offshore operations. So, you know, I don't know how much luck we're going to have from the prosecutorial point of view. And I think it's going to rely more on safe practices and using technology to try to stay ahead of the bad guys.
Any other questions? If not, we'll close the hearing on House Bill 2302. Any other business that we have?
No. Okay, Mr. Chairman of the Committee, as I understand it, 2179 was scheduled for a work session next Tuesday to move it on for the referral to the...
That's correct.
Recommend a referral to the other committee. You have your agenda for the tour this Thursday, if you're going to be able to make... You will not be there. But if you'll be at the front steps, Court Street at 1 o'clock, the attendant, they'll have a van for us, and they'll also get us back here. And I just saw pictures of the building. It actually has walls, and they've, like, there's special stuff in the building, so, in the new one. So.
Any other announcements, Doug?
No, sir.
If not, we'll close the meeting.
Would there be any reason why we can't drive ourselves?